Okay, so we went through some of the theories as to why Chazal made the takana of Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum, and some of them are distinct and some kind of merge into each other, essentially ranging from the idea that they are a earlier prototype of Daf Yomi, kind of a learning program that Chazal instituted, that we should be a Baki B'Torah. And then the question is it specifically aligned with Kriyas HaTorah? The Gemara makes it clear that it should be correlated to the Kriyas HaTzibur. Is that because it is associated specifically with the Kriyas HaTorah in an active way? That's somewhat of a question. We saw either maybe because it should be serving like the Mar Makomos for Shir, be a parallel to our recent experience with Purim, where some understand that that is the nature of the nighttime Kriyas HaMegillah vis-a-vis the daytime Kriyas HaMegillah, or maybe it's there in order to enable one to lain if one got called up for an aliyah at back Bizmanehem, when that used to mean you had to lain. So perhaps Shnei Mikra was meant to enable that to whatever extent it would accomplish that. So it could be that it is a learning program in and of itself, which would explain the fact that our attitude is to be mekel, like the Shmuel Sadeshin discussed, not to obligate an additional Shnei Mikra for krios that go beyond the regular Seder of the year, such as the Dalet Parshios that we just completed, or the Yontif readings that we'll do in a few weeks, any of those additional readings that repeat Krios from the normal Parsha cycle, so we don't have the practice of doing Shnei Mikra on those, and that would explain it, as opposed to if we say that it's specifically to prepare for the laning, so then that may indicate that one should do Shnei Mikra on those, which isn't our practice. We noted the view of the Ravan, which could be a great kula, except that it's not brought l'halacha, is the idea that it's only meant for those who aren't able to go to shul, and it's meant to be the home version. And Rav Kook understood in his Tov Roi as saying it's really quite the opposite of that, that it's meant to be two distinct tracks, that we're meant to have the Chovas HaTzibur, that's the Kriyas HaTorah, according to the majority view that that is what Kriyas HaTorah is, and the Chovas HaYochid, that's meant to be separate from that, and not that one should replace the other. That was always the plan, that there should be two distinct tracks. And I mentioned that one could perhaps take the view of the Ravan L'chumra, that specifically when one isn't able to go to shul, maybe one should be machbid to do Shnei Mikra specifically at that time, and that that was a recommendation we had during the COVID months, and that that would also then come out l'chumra, that maybe one should do it for those readings that we otherwise are makel not to do, such as the Dalet Parshios and the Yontif readings. Okay, so that brought us up to the next point of mystery, which is why is it that the Gemara on our daf, I should also mention, by the way, just before getting to that mystery, if you want some real mystery, Darach HaNistar, so you could take a look at the Chassam Sofer in his Chidushim to Maseches Chulin, and Daf Chav Chesem and Beis, he has a hesber of the whole idea of Shnei Mikra, early Alpi Darach HaNistar. So it's one that's very hard to say over, but if anyone is inclined to look for an explanation along that path, so feel free to take a look over there. Again, that's Chav Chesem at Beis and Chulin in the Chidush Chassam Sofer. He has a completely different approach and a very different derech. Okay, so with that, so one major mystery is why it is that the Gemara throws in this mysterious clause that's hard to understand. So we have to do Shnei Mikra v'afilu ataros v'divon. So what is that meant to include? What is that meant to tell us? So what are your thoughts? What can you fill me in about this? What's the chiddush of this pasuk ataros v'divon? Caleb?
Maybe there's something to the names, that they're not just names, but there's something deeper about them.
Well then, so why would the Gemara have to what's the back and forth? What's the chiddush? What's the havmina? What's the maskana? Yaron, you have a hand up?
That they're more like exemplary, I guess. I mean, the Gemara is using these two words as examples, that I guess words that don't have targum, you're still supposed to, I guess, figure out a targum for them. So if it's not, you know, targum unclus, maybe there's another translation or something that you're supposed to do for them.
Okay, so what I'm hearing here is a little bit of a mixture of different interpretations in Rishonim. Eric, you want to add to that? You want to question that?
Just add to it a little bit, because it's funny because the examples that Tosfos give on top of them are Reuven and Shimon, which mamash have no explanation. It seems to be these words maybe have a possible explanation, but we don't know them.
So like these words are different. So yeah. Then what would that then imply as far as Reuven and Shimon?
That Reuven and Shimon, like, don't have any translation. Reuven and Shimon are Reuven and Shimon. But there is some definite, there is some targum for these words. We might just not know them.
So what's the chiddush of the Gemara then? So what's the chiddush in both directions? So what's the Gemara telling you about Ataris V'Dibron, and what's it telling you about Reuven and Shimon?
So Tosfos says you should read it over a third time. So it seems to be that anything you don't have a targum for, you need to read a third time.
So that's the chiddush of the Gemara?
It seems to be the thing that Rishonim sort of take from the Gemara. I don't know if their Gemara explicitly states that, but they shouldn't seem to take from the Gemara that you have to do something with these non-targum words. And that might be reading it a third time.
Okay, let's try to take it apart. What essentially are the main questions here? And this was one of the questions that one of you brought up the first day when we were trying to lay out what the issues would be. So what the Rishonim are trying to identify here are questions you could ask from two directions. One is you could have asked the question by itself, even if the Gemara hadn't said anything. Now, what should I do about a pasuk where the targum doesn't seem to add anything? Separately from that, you could ask the question from another direction. How do I read this Gemara? Why is this Gemara bringing up this random example which I wouldn't have thought to question in the first place? And then my answer is going to have to explain why that's the best example. And there, Rishonim are going to fight over this. So let's approach the question that way. So what would you think should be the position about a pasuk where the targum doesn't add anything? And before you answer, maybe let me phrase it a little bit differently. I would imagine that you probably are not in a position to answer that question definitively, because it probably connects to some more fundamental question as to what are we trying to accomplish here. So what would it depend on? So don't necessarily look to answer the question in a yes or no fashion, but tell me what would the elements be in order to try to answer the question. Your own?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that this may depend on what we, I guess, set up earlier, that the machlokas of what we're trying to accomplish with Shnayim Mikra Becha Targum, if it's to be, I guess, more prepared for laning, then perhaps reading the pasuk again a third time would accomplish that. If it's about having a more holistic understanding of Torah or something, or something along those lines, then reading a different targum, not targum unclus, let's say it's, I don't know, even Mefarshim maybe, or like Rashi or something, would I guess accomplish that in terms of getting a better understanding of the Torah if there's no targum on that, but there's another Mefarish or something that could shed light on it, then maybe that would accomplish that goal.
Okay, that's a good start. Let me break it down even a little bit differently. Yeah, Caleb, what would you like to add to that?
Is the point of Shnayim Mikra Becha Targum specifically to not just know the words of the Torah, but to understand them. Like, for instance, if, you know, a nafka mina could be if the cities, you know, I mean, I don't know, I don't think the cities, Atzeret and Divon still are called that. So, oh, if you read, if for the third time around, you read them by the current names that they're called by, does that fulfill the purpose?
So,
it might tell you more substantive information than reading them in the original Hebrew, or it might not, depending on what we're trying to get at here.
Okay, so that is the issue. What are we trying to get at? So let's maybe break it down this way. So first, the first question could be like this. What is the purpose of the sum total of the three readings? Which you could understand in at least two ways, some of which we alluded to a little bit last time. It could be that Chazal wanted us to read it three times. There's a significance to three times. It's a good lock on something. Chet HaMishulah, Shalom B'Mehera Yinoteh. To do something three times is a good way to reinforce something. So perhaps it's an inyan of three. There are other indications of three. The Gemara in Sota, I don't remember if I put it on here in Makaros, but that there's a notion the Torah was given in three waves, in three tiers. So perhaps there is a notion of looking for a three-leveled process here. Yaron, you want to address that?
Yeah, so if it's about doing it, I guess, three times, then what's, I guess, why for the third time does it have to be with Targa, meaning...
Well, that's going to be, right, that's going to be a very important question. So then it could be that it's really about three times, but there's also a value to understanding what you're doing. So once we're doing it three times already, might as well make one time Betargum. Or... is it that, no, the whole third time, the Targum, was for the purpose of Targum and has no independent existence? Now, that question is important by itself because what's going to happen if you have a Pasuk where the role of Targum is uncertain. Meaning, let's say, could be a couple things. Either that there is no Targum at all, or that the Targum is debatable as to what qualifies as the Targum. So, first of all, what is the goal of this third Kriya? If there was always supposed to be a third Kriya and we just ideally would also make it a Targum, so then we'll always have a third Kriya no matter what. So if it turns out the Pasuk has no Targum available, then what's our Eitza going to be? Read the Pasuk three times. Because that was what we were going for to begin with. But if the idea is that it was never about reading the Pasuk three times, it's about getting a Targum for the third time, so then our possibilities are going to be either, if there's really no Targum, just read it two times, or, if not that, we have to figure out what would qualify as a Targum. And then we get the ambiguous situations. So what's the point of an example like Ataros V'Divon? So if you look at Rashi, right, what is Rashi's language? Right, you have Rashi in front of you. What does Rashi say? Right, so the reason Ataros V'Divon is mentioned, says Rashi, Agmar Naker Ataros V'Divon She'ein by Targum. So according to Rashi, it's a pasuk that doesn't have a Targum. So, according to Rashi, this is telling you a klal for any such pasuk. If there's no targum, you got to do it anyway. Well, do what? There's no targum. So we have to assume Rashi is saying that it means when there's no targum, read the pasuk three times. So apparently that's Rashi's understanding, that really it is a enactment of reading the parsha three times. And that's all the Gemara is telling you. But it's a pretty random example for that. So if you look at Tosfos and also the Mordechai, so the Tosfos asks two questions. One is that this is a strange example to give for such a point, for two reasons. One, it's very show-offy. Right? If you're going to ask somebody what's the most likely example that comes to mind of a pasuk that's names, and therefore the targum's not going to add anything, so only the real Chidon Tanakh winners are going to say Ataris V'divon. The normal people will say Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Pesukim in the beginning of Shmos. Right? So that's one question Tosfos has, that there's much better examples of this. And not only are there better examples, this isn't even the best example. Because in the Targum Yerushalmi, there is a translation. Now, if you looked inside, which I hope you did, I think I put this on the list to do, but maybe you would realize to do on your own. So, what's the big kasha on this whole thing, if you look at Unklos? Right, did you look at Unklos on the pasuk? So, the big kasha on the whole thing is that our Unklos actually does have a translation on the Taurus V'divan. And translates it as so that really throws even more of a monkey wrench into everything. So that's a little depressing. Why is it depressing? Not because of this sugya per se, but because it suggests to us that maybe our unklus is not pure unklus, and that maybe it's some other combination of things, which is depressing, because the Gemara in Megillah and Daf Gimel tells us that there's something sinaitic about unklus. And in fact, that might be why Chazal insisted on it. So that's a little frustrating, and that may also influence our practice, that the unkelus that we have may not actually be genuine or may not be pure, as indicated by this particular combination of factors. But Tosfos's two questions come together, and Tosfos says, Ataris V'divon is not a good example of something that has no Targum, because Reuven and Shimon is a better example. And Ataris V'divon, it's not 100% true. There is a Targum elsewhere. So what emerges from Tosfos is a radically different read, very different chidushim. Because Rashi is saying, what's the point of the Gemara? If there's no Targum, read the Gemara three times. Tosfos is not saying that. Tosfos is saying, the Gemara is not talking about something that has no Targum. So what's the din of something that has no Targum? Maybe just read it two times. Which Tosfos goes on to say, but then adds, but the minhag is to be machmir, but really the message of the Gemara would be is that that pasuk is not included, and psukim like that don't have a din of three times. So Ataris V'Divon is meant to be something else. So what is Ataris V'Divon? It is something that is somewhere in the middle. Our Targum doesn't translate it, or at least that's what Tosfos was assuming. Doesn't match our reality, but that's what Tosfos is assuming. But if you work a little harder, you could get a Targum that does have it. So that seems to understand that the purpose of Targum is really to get a translation and not simply a specific Targum. And if the Targum that is standard does not tell you anything, so then it's better, if possible, to look for a different Targum. So that's a pretty different understanding from Rashi. Now, the Rush says, similar to Tosfos. So I think it's actually the Rush. I say before Tosfos says was Nogu Lahachmir like Rashi. It's the Rush that says Nogu Lahachmir like Rashi. So addressing that question of Gimel Palmim, that was the Rush who says to read it three times. So the Rush adds that on to Tosfos. And Rabbeinu Yonah has it a little differently. And in the Targum, in the Rabbeinu Yonah, he has that the same beginning, but as far as the end, he's mesupak about whether you should say Reuven and Shimon three times, or maybe two times is enough. And in the Ritva, he also has that suffix. So it seems like the difference here between the Rush and Rabbeinu Yonah, whether it should be two or three times, goes back to that question we said before. Is this one takana of doing it three times? And just the third time ends up being Targum? Or is it two separate institutions? Now, if you look at the Rav Yah, he has it as two separate concepts. Tu lo hodiach hashivuso, so do it twice to show its importance. V'yachad targum lo dia b'feirish. And one of the targum to understand what it means. So that gives us an interesting span in terms of the views in the Rishonim. What we'll see tomorrow is that when you get to the Achronim, starting with the Taz and the Tzlach and Rav Yonasan Eibshitz and the Torah Tumimah, particularly interestingly, they all started this conversation over from scratch. And they all had their own completely different understandings of what exactly is the message of a Taurus Vedivo. And that took things down a different direction. So Bezat Hashem tomorrow, we'll start from that. But just to quickly recap here, so we saw Rashi assumes a Taurus Vedivo is a way of saying anything that has no Targum. It all has to be done three times. Tosfos is understanding a Taurus Vedivon as a more specific category. And things like Reuven and Shimon would have a different din. What that different din is the subject to a machlokas among the other Rishonim, the Rush and Reuven Yona and the Ritva, whether it's two or three times, which seems to reflect on what was the nature of the Takana overall. But then the question of what's the status of the Taurus Vedivon. So the point there, according to those Rishonim, is that you should search for a Targum where it is translated and that itself says something. Okay, so again, tomorrow we'll start with what the Achronim have to say about this, which takes things down a different path, and then we'll try to move it from there. All right, I look forward to seeing you in person tomorrow.